Welcome to episode 76 of the Unstoppable Podcast. This is part two of the Money Mindset series with Kate Northrup. My name is Dan J. Gregory, and I am committed to hunting down the secrets of business mastery and human performance. My goal for the Unstoppable Podcast is to share insights from some of the most successful entrepreneurs, inspiring thought leaders, world-class athletes, and prominent celebrities to help you to become unstoppable in business and life. Each week, I'll be bringing you a new interview with an inspiring person and sharing my own results as I pursue the answer to the question, how can I create the ultimate edge in my business, make a significant impact, and live an extraordinary life? Hello, and welcome to episode 76 of the Unstoppable Podcast. This is part two of my very special Money Mindset series. This series is inspired by the overwhelming response that I received to my episode about money shame, where I shared my own journey with debt and my relationship with money. Over the course of this mini-series, I'll be bringing you a range of top financial and money mindset experts to help you improve your financial well-being and your own relationship with money. In part two of the Money Mindset series, I have the enormous pleasure of introducing you to Kate Northrup. Kate is a full-time freedom seeker and a highly creative entrepreneur. Her simple philosophy is that if you free yourself financially, you can show up more fully in every area of your life. Kate created financial freedom in her own life at the age of just 28 by building a network marketing organization of more than 3,000 wellness entrepreneurs. She is committed to empowering as many people as possible to have the ultimate luxury in life, choice. Before I tell you more about this episode, let's recap what's been going on over the past week on the Unstoppable Podcast. On Monday's solo round, I shared an episode entitled System Reset, which was all about what I would do if I was to start over again in business. And I also shared some of my current objectives based upon some of the current challenges I've been experiencing in my business. Then last week, we kicked off the Money Mindset series with part one entitled The Art of Money, which featured special guest Barry Tesler, where we went deep into how to create a positive relationship with money. In this episode with Kate Northrup, we discuss how developing financial freedom begins with developing your own self-love. We talk about simple money practices that can help you build a more positive relationship with money, and we dive deep into how to eliminate debt. Kate is the best-selling author of Money, A Love Story, Untangle Your Financial Woes, and Create the Life You Really Want. And she helps entrepreneurs create magnificent changes in their lifestyles. And her work has been featured by The Today Show, Yahoo Finance, Women's Health, Glamour Magazine, and The Huffington Post. And she's spoken to audiences of thousands of people all across the world, including Hay House, Wanderlust, and USANA Health Sciences, and many, many more. Are you ready to create your own money love story? Ladies and gentlemen, introducing Kate Northrup. Kate, welcome to the Unstoppable Podcast. I'm absolutely delighted to have you on the show, especially as part of this special Money Mindset mini-series. And I'm really fascinated to hear your experience and your journey in this area and learn a bit more about you and share your journey with the listener. So a big welcome to the Unstoppable Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
It's my absolute pleasure. So Kate, would you mind just telling the listeners a little bit about yourself in your own words and what your kind of current responsibilities are and what you're working on at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. So I live in Portland, Maine, and I work with my husband, Mike, and we run a whole company based online where we teach people about creating more freedom in their lives. And I started this through the financial conversation. And I also talk about emotional freedom and spiritual freedom, but it started out for sure. And the core has been about financial freedom. Because to me, when you can create financial well-being and financial stability and financial freedom, it, to me, it's easier to be calm and rational about the other areas of your life. Because when we know we're being provided for financially, just things calm down and we can be more present because financial stress, you know, takes up so much bandwidth. And I wrote a book called Money, A Love Story that came out in 2013, nice. Based on the principles that I teach, which is really about that financial well-being is far less about spreadsheets than it is about mindset and our emotions, especially our emotions. So it's not so much, it's not only what you think, but it's how you feel. And when you can be in right relationship with money, life is easier. And so, that was an exciting project. And, and now, you know, Mike and I have, we have a daughter who's 1 year old. So we're new parents, and that's
congrats.
Thank you. That's been quite an adventure. So that's been kind of like taking care of Penelope and running our business is what occupies me mostly these days.
Awesome. So I'm really curious then. So talk to me about how, what sparked your journey and your desire really for financial freedom. Was there a kind of defining moment that led to that? Or is it something you've always wanted? I'm curious.
Yeah. So both of my parents are doctors. Neither of them practices anymore. They're retired. But growing up, they worked all the time. So they were on call. My mom was delivering babies. My dad was in the emergency room as an orthopedic surgeon, you know, fixing broken bones from motorcycle crashes, that sort of thing. So they just worked all the time. And, you know, my dad missed holidays because he was on call. My mom was traveling because she began to grow a writing and speaking career. And I noticed that, and I knew from a pretty early age that I wanted financial abundance, but I didn't want to work all the time like I saw them doing. And so then my parents got divorced when I was 16, and so much financial upheaval came with that. And my mom was really scared about money, and there was weird stuff that happened between my parents and money and between me and my dad and money. And, you know, and it was wounding as, as a young person. And so I, at that time, my mom realized she needed to get on the fast track of financial literacy because she had just given all financial decisions and responsibility to my dad. So even though she was a really great earner, she was not involved in the management of the money. And she just was like, oh, that's boring, or, you know, did the classic, like, that's for men to do.
Sounds like my mom.
yeah. And so even though she had a, you know, she actually had a thriving career, but, but it was during the divorce that she realized, I need to be empowered around this. And at that time, she started reading books by Robert Kiyosaki, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and, Catherine Ponder's The Dynamic Laws of Prosperity, and everything from kind of like, you know, financial management, like David Bach, Smart Women Finish Rich, to the more esoteric, like The Richest Man in Babylon, you know, so all across the board. And at that time I found that I had, you know, I was 16 years old, and I found I had this insatiable appetite for books on personal finance, and I just loved it. I soaked it all in, and I heard about this concept of financial freedom from Robert Kiyosaki, this idea that you could actually have enough passive or residual income to cover your living expenses so that you could choose to work or not work. You know, and you didn't have to have like a trust fund or something. Because I always thought people who didn't work, like, somebody else must have just made the money for them. So I was really inspired, and I was really inspired by that idea, and inspired by being an entrepreneur. I am blessed to come from a family of entrepreneurs. So that idea of being able to create my own financial reality was familiar to me.
Yes.
And so, yeah, it was right around the time of my parents' divorce that I kind of made a pact with myself. I didn't want to be in the same scared place as my mom was at midlife. I wanted to know this stuff ahead of time and be smart about it right from the beginning. And then, you know, of course, as you do, I ended up getting myself in a bunch of credit card debt. And like, I did not act as empowered as I could have through my early 20s. But then it was digging myself out of that debt and getting myself out of an intertwined sort of enmeshed relationship with my mom financially that became the basis for my book. Because despite trying to do all the right actions with money, like stop spending more than I earn, for example, and start saving money, I just like couldn't get myself to do it until I changed my relationship with money. And not only my relationship with money, my relationship with myself specifically around valuing myself. And so that was a huge, and self-worth. Wow. So that was really what my journey was about. And that's what I wrote about.
Cool. So there's lots of areas I want to kind of explore. So let's start with the kind of family piece, because often through these interviews, obviously, I get a bit of a glimpse into people's upbringing, where they've come from. And what's really fascinating to me is the influence that the family relationships have, either positively or negatively. You know, I've interviewed people who've come from kind of broken backgrounds, and that's inspired them to never want to be that way. I've seen people come from, you know, incredibly wealthy backgrounds, and then they've went through a strong period of struggle despite, you know, all the wealth in the background. And I've seen people who have come from an affluent background, but then they've really wanted to strive from the outset to kind of exceed and outdo their parents in some way. So it's really fascinating to see how people's upbringing. It's just there's almost a correlation between either having a very negative upbringing or a positive one where you feel like there's something that causes you within the family relationship to want to go and do something for yourself. So could you elaborate on kind of what your thoughts are on that in terms of the family and the relationship with it?
What a great question. You know, I think that I'm just so glad that you bring it up front, that everyone's relationship. So for you listening, everyone, your relationship with money has so much to do with your upbringing. Mm-hmm. And that's a piece that the financial industry completely ignores, largely. It's like, you know, you don't sit down with your financial advisor usually and go into, what did your mom say about money? What did your dad say about money? What were the beliefs handed down to you? Because those are the things that are running our decisions. We make decisions in our brain, in the amygdala, which is the kind of like the lizard brain. It's the emotional brain. And then we back it up with the prefrontal cortex, which is the logic. So we make the decision and then we back it up so that we feel good about the decision based on logic. But we never make that decision, you know, based on the proper information. We base it on a feeling.
Yes.
And those feelings are imprinted when we're children, because that's when we're the most impressionable. And so I love, you know, I also in my work have found that the most, you know, sort of the quickest path to freedom when it comes to our emotions around money is being willing to investigate what happened growing up and why do you feel the way you feel? And then to make a conscious decision about how you're going to act as a result, because most of us are having our lives run by like a 3-year-old or a 7-year-old.
Yes.
And we don't consciously say like, okay, I get that I was hurt when I was 3 years old, and now I'm a grown up and I'm going to take care of that 3-year-old. And I also get to decide how to react in this situation based on my adult self, not based on my programming. And that's where the freedom comes in. And that's where the power comes in. So knowing that is so key. And I find that awareness is the first step and sometimes the only step. Like people think, oh, it's going to take so much work and I have to do all this personal growth and da da da. And like sometimes just say, oh, wow, isn't that interesting? I'll do XYZ because of this thing in my childhood. Wouldn't it be cool if I did something different?
Yes.
And then you do.
Wow. So in your case then, so this is great. So awareness, I agree that awareness sometimes can be the seed of change in itself. So when you have that awareness and you become aware that there's money patterns in the past that have perhaps been dictated by your upbringing or the relationships you've had with money over the course of time, when you have that awareness, then how do you go about then making a decision about what money is going to mean to you? How do you then define your relationship with money?
I like to give people the exercise of writing their own money love story. And so you go through and actually write the narrative of what's happened to you in relationship with money. So who are the key players? How did you feel? What happened? And then the key is pulling out the things that you feel victim of, the things that you feel like happened to you and you had no control over, and identifying, you know, now first some anger may come up, sadness, whatever may come up, and feeling those feelings is really important. You know, sometimes you might need to write a no send letter where you, you know, write out all your anger and then just burn the letter, or whatever you may need to do, go for a long run. Everybody works out their emotions in different ways. But then after you've done that, coming back and being able to identify those areas and noticing how they actually have served you. So in my own example, let's take something that, you know, happened where my parents got divorced and I felt unsupported financially for various reasons. So I could look at that as, oh, this terrible thing happened to me. And, you know, and then through my 20s, I dated all these guys who were, you know, financially a mess and blah, 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 blah. And it's because, and it's my parents' fault, and I could go down that. Or I could say, wow, isn't that interesting that that happened? And therefore, I actually stepped into a place of financial empowerment more quickly than I would have otherwise. Mm. And I've created this whole successful business around it and been able to help other people. So we can take those things and look at, yes, these things happened, and no, we may not have chosen them, but look at some of the blessings in your life today and how they're actually connected to those things that you wouldn't have chosen, but that happened to you. You know, we hear a lot in the personal growth space that things happen for us, yes, not to us.
Yeah.
And so identifying those things is so huge. And I believe that we can gain so much insight, because when we are constantly pushing up against our story and saying, this shouldn't have happened, we're essentially discrediting our entire lives. And it also keeps us really stuck, because there's literally nothing you can do about what happened in the past, yeah, other than continue to move forward. And it will keep you stuck and keep you from creating the financial life you desire if you are constantly telling the same old story about, you know, what happened to you and how it was bad.
Mm. So the other thing that's, you know, when I said there was lots of things I'd like to dive into, the other piece you spoke about was, you know, the kind of self-love and the self-value. I think a lot of people have, in terms of the stories they create, are problems that have a negative consequence in the money when it comes to your own worthiness and your own self-love. So could you give some perspective and insight on that?
Absolutely. So, you know, one thing to really start out with is that your net worth is not the same as your self-worth. And those two things don't even need to be connected. So that's what we get so caught up in. And I think men more than women, just based on how our culture is, have more of a connection to, like, oh my gosh, how much I have in my bank account is how much I am worth as a human. Yeah. And we all have, you know, we're all just divinely worthy. You can't really put a price tag on a human. And so knowing that and just disentangling your self-worth from your net worth is really key, because if you're in debt, it doesn't make you a bad person. It doesn't make you less valuable. But I will say this. So that's true. And then what's also true is the more we value ourselves, the more value we add to the world. Because somebody who feels really badly about themselves is going to have their volume turned way down on their gifts and talents and the way they show up. You know, we know people like that who you meet them and you can just tell they just don't feel very highly about themselves. And, you know, for whatever reason that they're going through that, they're in general, like, a lack of self-confidence does not light up a room.
No.
And it does, like, you know, you're not giving yourself permission to shine fully when you have a dialogue going about how much you suck.
Yes.
And so doing the work around our self-value and beginning to value ourselves ensures that we then show up as more valuable in the world, and that we then elicit more value, because when you don't value yourself, no one else will value you either. And no one will value you more, certainly, than you value yourself. And so that piece is a huge piece that I work with people on, because, you know, no matter, I don't really care about savings and income and all that. I mean, I do, but at the same time, if you don't have the self-value piece dialed in, the financial actions you take will never really last.
Mm. So could you share how you kind of enhanced and up-leveled your own self-value and your own self-love?
Yeah. So for me, I noticed that I was in a business relationship with my mom where I did not feel valued, and I was letting myself sort of be in a position that I was not showing up fully, and I didn't feel like I was really being honored for what I could bring to the table. And that wasn't my mom's fault or anything. It was just like, it was the situation. It was kind of like the dance that we were doing together.
Yeah.
And so, what I did is, as I began to really had to make a mental shift, which was, if I could take care of my money as an act of self-love, as opposed to, I had always approached financial literacy from a place of beating myself up and feeling bad about myself and feeling like stupid or lazy or, you know, oh, this is too boring. And when I switched when I was like, wait a second, the reason I'm not getting results is that I'm approaching this conversation from a place of basically like self-hatred instead of self-love. And if I could look at my financial awareness, like if I could look at my bank account balance as part of my as part of a self-care practice in the same way that going to get a pedicure or taking a bubble bath is, then I could actually, I could actually switch the relationship and I might actually have fun taking care of my money. And the whole thing really did shift. But then I started noticing all the ways in my life that I was giving my power away, which is a symptom of not feeling valuable. When you give other people your power, that it's because you don't feel ultimately like you're enough, like you're powerful enough, so you just want them to do it for you. So it started to become really clear all the places I was giving my power away. One of them was in this business with my mom. Yeah. And I began to shore up those relationships. So I began to renegotiate the, you know, the contracts, both energetically and literally, so that I was actually coming from, you know, I basically had to put on my big girl panties and say like, no, I actually do bring quite a bit of value to the table and we need to reorganize this. And as a result of stepping into valuing myself in those very practical ways, I started to make more money, because when you step into your power, you start to make more money. because you just can't really help it.
Yeah. And good on you for that. Congratulations for doing that as well. That's a very bold move. And what I'm keen to explore is, you know, this evening, literally just before I got on the call with you, I did a two and a half hour kind of breakthrough workshop with some of my clients on some of their kind of patterns that are holding them back. And it was deeply profound. And of course, one of the questions they're all asking at the end is, okay, I have the conscious awareness and now I've decided to reclaim my truth and find what the reality is in terms of who I really am rather than what's been holding me back.
Yeah.
Just live for my strength. But they're all asking, how do I know this is my core, but then how do I make it real? How do I condition this? And I'd be really keen to understand if that's the kind of similar experience that you went through and what kind of advice you would give to someone to condition that new thought pattern and those new truths. I call them transformational truths, and how you integrate them into your life.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely can take, it takes practice, right? It's just like having a yoga practice. You're not going to be able to do the perfect downward dog in your first yoga class.
I know that.
You know, and your shoulders are probably going to be tight and your wrists are going to hurt and you're going to be like, this feels really weird. Mm-hmm. So being a new way feels weird. And so we just have to know that it feels weird and just do it anyway. Yeah. So practice, let's say you tend to get triggered in a certain way when you talk about money with your spouse. Maybe let your spouse know ahead of time, like, I'm going to practice this new way of being. I'm going to be awkward at first. But I just want you to know that I'm aware that I get triggered here and I'm going to try something else. And so I find that, identifying the situations that bring up the old pattern is really key, so that you know going into those situations, oh, this in the past, this has been a triggering situation. Yes. Okay, let me just walk in here as a grown up, and how can I try to do it differently? And you'll know, like, you'll slip up and you'll be like, whoops, there I go again. And it'll, you know, you'll get re-triggered by the same old stuff. But you have to trust that the awareness is changing you on a cellular level. There's a principle in physics or something, it might not be physics, but it's something like that. In science, it's definitely in science.
Yeah.
That when something is witnessed, it actually physiologically is changed. Like, it literally is different when it's witnessed. So awareness really actually does change us. And it's having the courage to make those changes and feel weird at first. Yeah. And then they just become habit over time. But I do recommend having accountability of some kind, and also noticing, like, what if there is somebody in your life that triggers you all the time in this certain way, like, could you have a conversation with them about that? Are they somebody you want to really spend a lot of time with? Like, maybe they're not.
Yeah.
So reorganizing the relationships is really big, because we do these dances with other people, and we, you know, we kind of have soul contracts with other people. And when you break your soul, your end of the bargain, like, they might be freaked out by that because you're no longer doing the same dance. Like, if you stop getting triggered, then they don't really know what their part is. So just be aware of that too, because that's what will suck you back in to the old patterns, is sort of the comfort of being in the dance, especially with parents, spouses, siblings.
It's always the closest people, isn't it? It's always the
Yeah, it's always the closest people.
Yeah. Now, what about daily practices then, in terms of, you know, conditioning the new kind of money mindset, or, you know, enhancing your relationship with money? Is there some certain daily rituals or practices that you go through that help you with, or have gone through, that have really helped you with your financial journey?
Yeah. And I really like to keep it super simple, because we all have plenty to do. You know, you don't need like an hour long money ritual every day. So one thing I do every single time I go to pay for something in cash is I put the money, my change, back in my wallet with the bills all facing the same direction and in numerical order. So my ones are together, my fives, my tens, my twenties. And I, you know, nothing gets balled up. I don't like shove money in my pocket. The change all goes in the same, like the right little zippered container. And to me, that's a way of, it takes me maybe an extra 30 seconds to do it, but that's a way of me showing money I respect it, and showing money that it's safe with me and that it will be well taken care of. And every time I do that, I'm consciously affirming those things. And so my awareness of it affirms that. So that's something I do every time I pay cash, which maybe isn't every day, but most days. And then my husband and I have a money meeting every week, or a money love date. So it's a standing date on a Monday at 2:30. We sit down and we transfer whatever needs to be transferred. So, you know, we transfer money into savings, into our taxes account. We transfer money from our business into our needs account and wants account. So we keep our personal expenses separate from needs and wants. We do that every single week on a weekly basis. And that has been very powerful for us to put that attention. It takes about, 5-10 minutes. It's no big deal. And then once a month we have a longer money meeting where we go over our reports from our bookkeeper, and we pay credit cards, and we, you know, do whatever larger kind of transfers we need to happen. And then when I was starting to kind of dig myself out of financial avoidance, which is really, I was like a chronic financial avoider. I just wouldn't open credit card statements. I just would put all my paperwork in a drawer and never look at it. So I needed to start really small. So what I did is I set an alarm every day, 8:30 in the morning. I would look at my bank account balance, and I would take a deep breath and take a moment of gratitude for the ways that my life was abundant right in that moment. So I was literally consciously rewiring myself to look at money and feel gratitude and feel expansion and feel abundance, as opposed to what I had been doing, which was, oh my gosh, there's not enough money in there, or I'm in overdraft, or, you know, and I would go into a downward spiral, which is why I wouldn't open my bank account balance to begin with, because it was too painful. Mm. So I was trying, I was rewiring myself to feel a pleasurable feeling dealing with my money, as opposed to a painful feeling.
Totally changing the associations to cash and money.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. You touched on debt then. Here's an interesting subject, eliminating debt. This whole series was prompted by an episode I did on money shame several weeks back, because I just wanted to confront the truth about my own debt journey, because it felt like a release. I wanted to talk about it because I was still carrying some of the debt from my corporate days.
Yeah.
I'm a slightly irresponsible youth, and I've spent plenty of time kind of examining the debt, but I'm really interested in your perspective, because if someone's in a debt position, and I've been in a debt position where that's all you see, you know, how do you go about, it's okay looking at your bank balance and seeing a bank balance and feeling gratitude, but if you've got that debit sign at the end of it every time, how does someone then begin to shift their mindset when it comes to debt? And, you know, what are the steps to eliminating debt?
Well, you told the first one, which is telling the truth about it.
Yes.
That is so huge. And that's the one that most people skip. So there is this shame about it. And I had it. I didn't tell anybody for like a couple years. And I will never forget the first time I told somebody, and what a relief it was to tell somebody. Now, it's just not anybody you want to tell. Tell somebody safe, you know, tell somebody who's not going to go into judgment or fear or whatever. Tell somebody who you know you can trust with that information. The weight that lifts when you're willing to tell the truth. First of all, I had to tell the truth to myself because I had never totaled up the amount that I owed. It was like on a bunch of different cards and I would move it around and transfer to zero balances. Yeah. And so like I never really knew the truth. So I totaled it all up and it was shocking because it was way more than I thought it was going to be. But then it was also freeing because just like when we use a GPS, you can't find the route to your desired destination if the GPS cannot find your current location. So telling yourself the truth about your financial situation is your current location so that you can then build a plan to move towards your desired destination. So telling yourself the truth and then telling somebody else safe the truth or telling your podcast listeners, which is also a fantastic idea.
Yeah, I've done that.
it's great because everybody I have met has a little bit, has a couple skeletons in the closet when it comes to money.
Yes.
I have never met anybody who doesn't have something a little bit strange going on when it comes to money. And so if we would just all talk about it a little bit more, we would all feel less paralyzed by the shame because we're all human and we're all flawed and we've all made mistakes that we wouldn't choose to do again today, but that have been part of our journey. So that piece is really huge. And then I also recommend changing the name of bills to invoices for blessings already received.
I love that.
So that's a mindset shift where, again, it's about creating more of a warm, fuzzy feeling when dealing with our money as opposed to like a contracted, fearful feeling. So when you're paying your invoices for blessings already received, you can go through and itemize your blessings and say, oh, look, this credit card bill I'm paying about for on the balance. And on this card, I bought that amazing trip to Paris that, no, I did not have the money in my bank account, but gosh, I really had a good time. Yes. And I bought, you know, 5 rounds of drinks for my coworkers and it was a wild night and it was awesome. And, you know, you can actually go through and identify. Now, of course, not every expenditure you're going to feel awesome about, but there are going to be some in there that you can go back and be like, yeah, actually, there were some blessings in that. And I'm simply paying back the blessings I already received. It doesn't make me a bad person. And then that changes the dynamic.
I love that perspective. You know, I did a similar exercise. I looked at it, look at the debt that I had left over, and I thought, wow, actually, what does that represent? And I started thinking about all the holidays, all the experiences. But what was interesting, I'd be interested in your insight on this, because when I did that, I started thinking, oh, debt's not so bad after all. And I just thought, I caught myself thinking, you don't want to, if you want to eliminate this, you don't want to start associating positive things to it because your desire to avoid it, to get rid of it, will diminish. So I was like, right, let's go back to the pain.
And that's really interesting. See, to me, what we resist persists. So I guess
for me, just to elaborate on that a little bit, to give some context, the pain was different from the stress that comes with it. It was more of a, I want to remove this from my life and have, you know, a cash positive balance. So the pain was not the same pain as it was when, you know, it feels like a burden. That's a very different pain. It was almost like a deliberate association that I'd created with it to give me that, the push and the pull to move away from it. But I just wanted to clarify that, but I'd be very interested on what you think about that.
Well, and I think I will say this. I think everybody has a different relationship to it because, you know, that kind of like no pain, no gain. It has to be uncomfortable in order for me to do something about it. That is one way that works for some people. Mm. For me, I found now I was still motivated to pay off my debt because I just wanted that freedom of feeling like, ooh, it's gone. So I made friends with it and it was more of a, as opposed to like being like, oh, this is totally okay and it's all perfect and I have no regret about it. It was more of a journey of acceptance. Yeah. So there's a difference between acceptance and saying, oh, everything's fine.
Yes.
Right? Because acceptance is more of a surrender. So you stop wasting energy trying to make the past different. Mm-hmm. But, as you know, and so that to me is you want to move towards acceptance because the energy then that you save that you were previously spending trying to, you know, beating yourself up and going back. And it's like just, it's totally wasted. You can't do anything about it.
Yeah, you're right.
But that energy could be used towards generating income and being much really great about saving, like that.
Yeah, I'm much more of a move towards kind of guy anyway.
Yes,
you know, so that, you know, that freedom piece drives me way more than thinking about, you know, the pain of past regrets, as it were.
Right, totally.
So I love that. So I want to touch upon your business. Obviously, that's been a key part in your building your financial future. How did you go about choosing the right business for you?
That's a good question. So I read in Robert Kiyosaki's book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, that if you want to learn about business and building assets, that you should spend 5 years with a good network marketing company. Mm-hmm. So, and I read that when I was in high school and my family happened to use the products from a great company. So, you know, a highly reputable scientific company. And so I just did that because I already knew them and I had the support built in. My aunt and uncle have been my mentors and they're incredible entrepreneurs. And so, so that's where I started. And then kind of through a chance meeting at a yoga class, I ended up meeting a woman named Marie Forleo. Cool. And she kind of opened up this whole world for me about internet marketing, which I had known about a little bit. I went to one of T. Harv Eker's seminars, the world's greatest marketing seminar. And I was like, whoa, this is a whole thing. but then Marie was teaching it in a more feminine way that I could really understand. So I learned about that. And then I started a blog sort of on a whim in 2010. And then that turned into a business because people were reading the blog. And then I was recommending other people's courses. So I got into affiliate marketing because I was really already sort of doing the same thing with my network marketing business. I was just like telling people about, you know, I was a curator. I've always been a curator of, I actually studied art history in college and I thought I was going to be a museum curator. But it turns out I'm more of a life curator. So I just go about life and find things that I love and tell people about them. So I got into that. And then, when I met my now husband, in 2011, he really inspired me to start making programs and products of my own. And so that's been our trajectory. And then my book deal came along and that came out in 2013. And then we've been doing different programs and fun things ever since. And I'm kind of taking things in a new direction now with a conversation around how can we create more abundance in our life through less instead of through more. Oh, wow. So that's the inquiry I'm in right now.
Wow. Oh man, there's so much time. There's not enough time for us to get this all this stuff would be fascinating. This always happens. So where should we go? We've only got a little bit left. So I want to hear about the programs because I know we were talking a little bit before we started around the programs that you've got coming up that could really help some of the listeners. Would you mind sharing a little bit about what you've got going on?
Sure. So my kind of flagship or primary program is called the Money Love Course. So it takes you through some of the exercises that I've shared today and then much more. It's a self-guided four module course delivered via video that takes you through how can you change your relationship to money? How can you change your relationship to your own value so that you can pay off your debt faster, make more money, become a masterful money manager, and really get your head screwed on straight when it comes to money. So that course is available at themoneylovecourse.com or also just on katenorthrup.com. And so that's the one that we have going kind of at all times. And then I've got some fun things coming up in January, February, but they're not really solidified enough to talk about them because I know how I am and I might change my mind.
Cool. So watch this space.
So
the piece you just mentioned about having less, could you give just a short insight on that? Because I know we've already got a few minutes left, but I'm so curious though. I want to know kind of your thought processes on that and what that all means.
Yeah. So for example, I was living in New York City in one of the most expensive neighborhoods in the world. Granted, in a very small apartment, but still, and my lifestyle was, you know, really, I spent a lot of money and that's how I got myself into debt. I shopped, I did a bunch of events, I traveled, all this stuff. And my decision to, I got rid of in 2010, 2011, I got rid of nearly all of my belongings. I bought a Prius and I took off on this road trip call, and I was calling it the Freedom Tour, to really investigate what does freedom really mean financially and otherwise. So nice. To me, it was a process of letting go. And I created tremendous abundance. Not only was I able to pay off my debt, but just sort of like a feeling of spaciousness and abundance from, and my expenses were so much lower than they were when I was living this life of more. And so it's not necessarily about like minimalism, because I'm not a minimalist by any stretch of the imagination. But it's about putting your focus on what really matters, because what got me into debt was chasing the things that I thought would make me look a certain way, as opposed to chasing the things that would make me feel a certain way. And so how it's really an inquiry around how can we fill our life with only what matters and not the excess? Because when we do that, my experience has been that we feel tremendously abundant and we feel full, like we feel beautifully full, and we have less striving, and where it's not like constantly chasing the next, you know, the next big raise or the next level in our business. And while I'll always be going after goals, there's like a difference between the clingy energy of like desperation and the feeling of, yeah, my life is really good right now, and this will be fun to add on.
Nice. That's a great perspective. Awesome. So I've got a final kind of quick fire question that I ask all my guests, given it's the Unstoppable podcast. I'd like to know what being unstoppable means to you.
Oh, being unstoppable to me is, you know, I'll tie it right back in. It's knowing what truly matters. It's knowing what truly matters. It's really guiding life and prioritizing our time, our days, according to what's important to us and what actually fills us. Like what are the things that at the end of your life, you'll look back and say, yeah, I'm really glad I created that. And then, because those are the things that fuel us. And no matter, you know, how much our baby keeps us up at night, or no matter, you know, what's going on, we will be fueled by those things.
Awesome. So that leads me to ask one final question. What in Kate Northup's life is most important to her?
My baby and my husband.
Wow.
So beautiful. My family, for sure.
Nice, nice. Thank you for sharing. Well, Kate, I believe you are thoroughly unstoppable, and I would love to thank you on behalf of the listeners and myself for unleashing your greatness today on the Unstoppable podcast. The final thing for us to do is where should we send the listeners if they want to find out more about your work?
Oh, please come over to katenorthrup.com. I send out a weekly blog of musings about whatever is important to me. And the feedback I get is that people have told me, you know, I've unsubscribed from every email, but I read yours every single week. So I love hearing that. And that's like my biggest joy is my weekly writing. So please come over to katenorthrup.com and check it out.
Magic. Thank you so much, Kate. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. I've thoroughly enjoyed it and cannot wait to share the episode.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to Kate for sharing her wisdom today on today's show. I really hope you enjoyed part two of the Money Mindset series, and I'm excited to bring you part three next Thursday. But what I'm even more excited about right now in this moment is on Monday's episode, my solo round, I'm going to be revealing the November 30-day financial sprint. This is where I invite you, the listeners of the Unstoppable podcast, to join me and having your best financial month of the year yet. You see, the Christmas period is often a time of heavy expenditure, and those months leading up to the Christmas period are very intensely financially challenging. So wherever you are in your business or your life right now, perhaps you're carrying some debt, perhaps you're thinking about the future, perhaps you're planning for a holiday, perhaps you're planning for Christmas. Whatever's going on in your life right now, if you're looking to up-level your finances, your income, eliminate debt and have a cash positive, more positive relationship with money, then over the next 30 days of November, we are going to be doing a 30-day Thrive Sprint. We're in the private Facebook for the Unstoppable Tribe over Unstoppable Mastermind on Facebook. We'll be working together day in, day out to support each other and hold each other accountable in raising our financial standard. I'll be sharing new content every day in addition to this Money Mindset series, which is going to continue throughout the entire month of November. So get ready for that launch on Monday in the solo round. And then we go into part three, where I'll be bringing in our first male speaker in the Money Mindset series, Chris Budd. I cannot wait to bring you part three, and I cannot wait to unleash the challenge on Monday. So be sure to subscribe to the Unstoppable podcast. And until next time, go out there, unleash your greatness, build your empire, make your mark on the world, and live your ultimate life. You are unstoppable. Thanks for listening.